Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 7th day of August, 2021. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and let's start off our look at a week where totalitarianism literally went into full jackbooted goose step, with several stories from, I guess, what we should call the Mark of the Beast files. And at this point, all I have to do is to say something which would mark a person, and without which they wouldn't be allowed to buy or sell, or for that matter, go to a restaurant, get on board a plane, or enter a government building, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. And let's start with this story from CNN, which now seems to stand for coercion, not news. They fired three of their employees for daring to come to work without having submitted to the poison poke. The news broke on Thursday after it was reported that the employees, quote, violated company policy by daring to think, my body, my choice, and rejecting the idea of being human guinea pigs. CNN chief Jeff Zucker wrote in the memo, which came out Thursday, reminding employees that vaccines are acting mandatory if they report to the office or if they work in the field, where they might come into contact with other, better employees than themselves. In the memo, first obtained by the Associated Press, the Zucker said, let me be clear, we have a zero-tolerance policy on this. Everyone, it said, from news, sports, and studios who comes in now and going forward must be vaccinated. Even if, of course, everybody who's been paying attention knows it's not even really a vaccine. We have been clear about this for months, so there should be no confusion, said the memo. Well, unless, of course, you still think the law actually means something in Communist News Network America. But the fascist trend accelerated on Friday with, among others, United Airlines, which became the first major U.S. carrier to require its staff to all be vaccinated. The decision isn't exactly a surprise, though, says Zero Hedges Coverage, because United CEO Scott Kirby said during an interview earlier this year he'd prefer to make vaccination a requirement so long as United wasn't alone. No, we need others to sign up to do the same evils that we are, because misery loves company, and they want to make very certain, folks, that you don't have any other options. But now that United has made its fascist move, you can probably expect every other public-private partnership, i.e. major carrier, to announce their own poison poke requirements. Let me make a quick suggestion here, folks. Remember when United used to talk about flying the friendly skies in all their big-budget advertisements? Well, nowadays, the solution is real simple, maybe even life-saving. Don't fly the fascist skies. Besides which, wouldn't you prefer a pilot that might not keel over with some kind of an embolism, a stroke, or other spike protein-induced cardiopulmonary event at 34,000 feet? Said the story, although it's subject to change, United employees have until October 25th to receive the poison poke and upload their injection record to a company database. Because, don't you know it, they own your body. And this follows a mid-June order requiring new hires to provide proof of coronavirus vaccinations before their start date. So far, says Zero Hedge, the group of U.S. companies requiring vaccination had been limited mostly to left-coast socialist tech giants like Microsoft and Two Facebook. But now that the precedent's been set and they're getting away with it, the cancer is spreading. And your host will make one additional observation at this point. No, folks, I do not believe that the current vaccine passport and COVID-1984 Zyklon B poke, deadly and certainly satanic though they may be, is literally the mark of the beast. But that's coming real soon now, because obviously every single legal, social, economic, and totalitarian precedent that makes what the Book of Revelation described possible is now undeniably being put in place. At this point, there are no further impediments of any sort, short of massive armed uprising, at least, to what follows inevitably from here. So after all of that, I guess it's appropriate to at least note that there are more than a few people beginning to say, hey, we've had enough, or maybe,
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
And begin at least to push back. It's time to take a stand, says a new movement and website called Walkout Wednesday, which is spearheading a nationwide peaceful protest at your place of employment or your school or whatever at noon local time on Wednesday, August 11th to walk out because it says, and this is correct, no one should be forced, coerced, or pressured to inject the COVID shots. And furthermore, if we still had a rule of law and a Bill of Rights or even a Nuremberg Code, such coercion would be intolerable in a free society anyway. And besides, the federal emergency use authorization for the not vax, as well as the FDA and their fact sheets, state unequivocally, and that's kind of a funny term, isn't it, in a land where the law doesn't even mean what's written in genuine print anymore. Still, it says that each person has the, quote, option to accept or refuse the poison poke. The shots are, of course, experimental, investigational, and not licensed by the FDA. And the Nuremberg Code, if anybody paid any attention to that, some that did, though, have been hanged since, claims that voluntary consent is, quote, absolutely essential. Or at least it was when people were still treated like human beings. So spread the word, the announcement says, and we are right here. So spread the word, they say, about next Wednesday, August 11th, at noon in your local time zone. Employers, businesses, schools, medical facilities, or public places trying to force the COVID injections on employees, students, or patrons must hear from you. Walk out at noon, August 11th, and gather outside to peacefully protest these absolutely unconscionable, and yeah, I'll say it, downright satanic mandates. As an engineer, it's particularly galling to me to see politicians and idiot bureaucrats pontificating and making what they call law concerning things about which they're woefully ignorant. But here's one for the record books, because the imposter in chief, the senile one, is announcing a new order to mandate, because he is the Fuhrer, don't you know, 40 to 50% of all U.S. auto sales must be electric by 2030. And if most Americans would prefer to have a real gas-powered car that'll go further on a tank and doesn't take 4 hours to charge, well, so much for you. Sorry, you don't get to drive. Since people vote with their dollars and still would prefer to buy cars that meet their actual needs, we're going to mandate it like we do everything else. They'll cost between 50 and 300 grand. They'll take hours to fully charge. No wonder people don't want them. But that's still not the real technical issue. And it exposes the great big lie. Here's the problem. There's not enough electric power generation capacity in the grid to do what it is that they're talking about. The simple math goes like this. It takes X number of kilowatt hours to charge one of these vehicles, and on that they can go a certain number, not particularly impressive by the way, of miles. How many vehicles are we going to have? Well, a whole lot of them if we mandate them. How much power is that going to take? Oh, well, you know, like a whole lot more than the entire grid is capable of providing. Especially if you're saying, we don't like coal, and we don't like nuclear, and we're getting rid of this. You're not going to run these things off of windmills and solar panels. But wait, there's more. Turns out that there were some studies that have come out saying, you know what? There's not enough rare earth materials, not enough lithium, not enough neodymium, and other rare earth minerals to make all of these vehicles. The mining capacity isn't there. Oh, well, that won't stop it. That'll just increase the price. We'll mandate them. What'll that mean? Well, here's the easy answer. There's going to be a whole lot of people walking. They won't have the cars. Well, they're actually already talking about that. Well, we'll have Uber instead. The few, you know, the party members, maybe they'll get to have a car. You peons, if you're lucky, you know, you can have one for an hour a week if you're a good little slave and get your poke. And there are lots of other issues because essentially just about everything around these vehicles says the reason why people don't want them is because they're not cost effective. Here's another one. The reality of owning an EV continues to sink in, says a piece from Zero Hedge. EVs, according to new studies, cost at least 1.6 to over 2.3 times more to service than good old-fashioned internal combustion vehicles. Oh, and by the way, when the incredibly expensive batteries wear out and die, and you actually have to buy a new set of batteries, you could have bought a nice internal combustion vehicle for a lot less than the batteries are going to cost. Oh, wait, no, I thought they were cheap. I bought the whole vehicle for less than that. Yeah, that's because Elon Musk and all these other well-connected globalist pawns have been subsidized in order to put these things out there. But they're not going to be subsidized forever, not when the masses need it. And as for the green issues, note that they don't talk about the carbon footprint of producing the electricity these things use or how many nasty batteries are going to end up in landfills. All part of the big lie. The truth is, The reason for electric cars is because they make you peons oh so much more controllable. From there, let's move on to some of the other big stories of the week and what I guess I had better call the treason update. Because sadly, there's so much of this from so many people that back when we were a free country would have probably been among those awaiting trial, and arguably for far lesser crimes than they're now getting away with. Among the communist infiltrators in the House is a really offensive scumbag named Cori Bush from Missouri, of all places. She's been working really hard, or so we're told, to advance the communist agenda and defund the police, because peons like you not only don't have a right to defend yourselves from your betters, like her, you don't have a right to police protection at all. She, on the other hand, is a whole different story. And as the headline from the Socialist Daily Mail even acknowledges, squad member Cori Bush is of course willing to spend $200,000 on personal security, but it's not her money anyway, of course, because her life is at risk, but insists that defunding the police still has to happen anyway. This after Federal Election Commission filings show that she spent nearly $70,000 on private security in just over a 2-month period from the middle of April to the end of June, and she intends to spend a whole lot more. Quote, I'm going to make sure I have security because I know I've had attempts on my life, unquote. Well, you know what, folks? I know she's making attempts on our lives, and I got a lot more evidence of it than she does. So if I end up spending $200,000, she says, if I spend $10 more on it, you know what? I got to be here to do the work, so suck it up. Well, Jeffrey Dahmer certainly had work to do. So did Joseph Stalin and Idi Amin. And we're better off without any of that work they all wanted to do to us. Her shameless hypocrisy and self-conflicting comments, defunding the police has to happen, she said, but her private security certainly has to be funded, have rightfully drawn criticism from actual representatives of their districts that have at least half a brain. Georgia Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene, in a lengthy Twitter post, said that, among other things, quote, you're a hypocrite and an elitist. And I think she's pulling her punches. You don't care about the people, you only care about you, she said in a tweet, which included a clip of Bush's interview with CBSN. You want to eradicate police from existence, take away guns to leave Americans defenseless, and create lawlessness over our country. But you'll pay endless amounts of money for private security for yourself, because your security is clearly more important than the taxpayers who pay your salary and for your private security. You're the BLM's domestic terrorist in Congress, is basically how she concluded. Said Georgia Congressman Jody Heiss, her arrogance is outmatched only by her insanity. And before I do one last comment, let's at least hear, in her own words, how her life is so much more important than any of her constituents.
I won't let them get that off. You can't get that off. I'm going to make sure I have security because I know I have had attempts on my life and I have too much work to do. There are too many people that need help right now for me to allow that. So if I end up spending $200,000, if I spend $10 more dollars on it, you know what? I get to be here to do the work. So suck it up, and defunding the police has to happen. We need to defund the police and put that money into social safety nets.
So let's hear, finally, from freshman Colorado Representative Lauren Boebert, who expressed her own surprise at just how over the top the hypocrisy here was, saying, quote, I actually thought this was a parody skit. No, it's real. But when it comes to people in high places trying to make war on a formerly free nation, the traitor masquerading as Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, may actually be in a position to do even more damage. And as I read this story, it occurs to me that calling this guy the Secretary of Defense is about as insulting as suggesting that America's own Dr. Mengele, Tony Fauci, be labeled a healer. But the man who's been working so hard to undermine and utterly destroy the defensive capability of the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and even Space Force of the United States is expected on Friday to announce a mandatory vaccine policy. Poke 'em all. For active duty forces in the military, according to Fox News. And this latest attempt at mass murder, directed at all 1.3 million U.S. service members, comes just days after the Biden Fuhrer moved to try to mandate that all federal employees, except those, of course, that have strong unions, like the Postal Service, take the Zyklon B poke. And in a speech last week, Biden said he was directing the DOD to examine ways around concepts like the rule of law in order to make the poke, which has so far avoided testing, except on humans, and is yet to be approved by the Food and Drug Administration, mandatory. Notes Fox, Not quite two-thirds of the active duty military forces have been manipulated so far into taking the poke, which would seem to imply that they have a greater average intelligence than the U.S. adult population at large, more of whom have already been duped, or at least so the regime claims. Meanwhile, the Pentagon had previously claimed they would wait until the COVID poke was actually FDA approved, or at least there was a pretense of it, before mandating it against all U.S. forces. Let me ask this, folks. Can you imagine the outcry if the Communist Chinese had come out openly to use their bioweapon on U.S. troops this way? Why, who needs hypersonic missiles if the forces you intend to destroy will voluntarily commit suicide? And at least one other commentator sees the threats your host thinks are downright obvious. Vox Day wrote, "What exactly does Lloyd Austin think he's going to do if one-third of the U.S. armed forces flat-out refuse to take the poke? They've been under pressure to get vaccinated for months already, but have stood firmly against it. And now they're all just going to submit to an order of deeply questionable constitutionality on the basis of a waiver provided by a man suffering from dementia that they all know perfectly well was not elected their actual commander-in-chief? How many are going to be incapacitated? How many are going to be dead within a year? Almost all of them will probably end up being infertile, but at least that's not an immediate military liability. And for crying out loud, how debilitating an effect will this have on military cohesion, esprit de corps, and other things like the willingness of troops to actually fight for a country that wants them dead? Or could this be something even more insidious, folks? Not just killing those who are stupid enough to stay in the military and making them easy fodder for the communist Chinese and the Russians and even the Iranians or anybody else that wants to move in and mop up what's left of the U.S. military in the vacuum of leadership that we're now seeing. Arguably, it's a continuation of a process and an agenda that we've seen being advanced for several years now. To purge constitutionalists, patriots, Christians, Bible believers, and actual independent thinkers out of the military. Either way, the inevitable result is to gut our fighting forces and expose the soft, vulnerable underbelly of a nation completely gone soft. This is an act of war against the United States military by none other than the traitors in the D.C. swamp. Not to be outdone, on the booga 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 front, one of the biggest liars not only in American history, the biggest traitor for sure in American history, but perhaps ever, Dr. Fauci-Stein, is at it again.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Why, it's so bad, he said, for the 37,000th time, the country will be in trouble unless everyone who hasn't yet been vaccinated, yeah sure, you lying SOB, it's not a vaccine and you know it, gets the jab. Quote, because we have about 93 million people in this country who are eligible to get vaccinated, who don't get vaccinated, that you have a significant pool of vulnerable people. Whereupon he went on to try to evoke fears of new strains which are even, booga, 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 scarier than Delta, like Lambda, which Japanese researchers are warning, and oops, maybe they shouldn't have let this out, might even be vaccine resistant. Because three mutations in the variant spike proteins make it more resistant to the so-called antibodies, the spike proteins, in other words, that are induced by taking the poke. But wait a minute. Yeah, we know how they're going to spin it. That's all the more reason to take the poke, whether it works or not. Zero Hedge concluded their coverage with a tweet from Kyle Becker, who pretty well nailed it with a tweet that said this, there may be an Omega death variant coming if we don't lock down and wear masks forever and get vaccinated and get 15 booster shots and never go outside, but maybe, nah, let's still be on the safe side and do all of it anyway, even if it destroys the country. Am I doing this right? After that, I guess we ought to turn to some good news for at least a minute, like the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, who came out swinging against the communist Chinese puppet senile Fuhrer on Wednesday after the Biden puppet attacked Republican governors Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott for daring to push back on their tyrannical vaccine passports and ridiculous mask mandates. Parroted Biden, if some governors aren't willing to do the right thing to beat this pandemic, then they should allow businesses and universities who want to do the right thing to be able to do it. Unquote. If you aren't going to help, at least get out of the way, said the Biden Fuhrer, no doubt as he drooled and then licked his chin. But still, not a word about the tens of thousands of COVID-infected illegal aliens pouring into places like Texas every month because of Biden's absolutely unconscionable open border policies. Which prompted Ron DeSantis to say, why don't you do your job? and secure our U.S. border rather than just pushing tyranny. Well, let's hear Ron DeSantis himself.
Joe Biden has taken to himself to try to single out Florida over COVID. This is a guy who ran for president saying he was going to, quote, shut down the virus. And what has he done? He's imported more virus from around the world by having a wide open southern border. You have hundreds of thousands of people pouring across every month. And it's not just from Mexico. In fact, it's rarely from Mexico. You have over 100 different countries where people are pouring through. Not only are they letting them through, they're then farming them out all across our communities across this country, putting them on planes, putting them on buses. Do you think they're being worried about COVID for that? Of course not. So he's facilitating. Who knows what new variants are out there, but I can tell you whatever variants are around the world, they're coming across that southern border. And so he's not shutting down the virus. He's helping to facilitate it in our country.
And Biden's solution, said DeSantis, is government tyranny and overreach and utter violation of the Constitution to boot, starting with counterproductive, utterly idiotic mask mandates, about which he said very correctly,
this is insane. Joe Biden also believes that vaccination should be mandated by force of government and that you should have to show vaccination status to be able to participate in society.
Whereupon he went on to talk about people in Florida being allowed to actually choose, and then contrasted that with Biden's Soviet plan.
So his vision is, just like in New York City, restaurants should ban young kids from being able to go in because they're not eligible for vaccination, and law-abiding citizens have to produce proof of their medical records just to go to the gym or attend an event or just to participate in everyday society. He wants that, but yet if you want to vote, he thinks it's too much of a burden to show a picture ID when you're voting. So no voter ID, but have to show your medical papers just to be able to live an everyday life? Give me a break. And so I think the question is we can either have a free society or we can have a biomedical security state. And I can tell you, Florida, we're a free state.
Which is wonderful to hear, folks, but I guess on the other side of the coin, it simply means that the battle lines have been that more clearly drawn. I did like the finish, though, where he basically told the Biden Fuhrer what he could do with his mandates.
So why don't you do your job? Why don't you get this border secure? And until you do that, I don't want to hear a blip about COVID from you. Thank you.
And I guess while we're on the subject of good news and people actually standing up for what's right, I'm going to do a bit of Olympic news. And given what a travesty the woke Olympics have been so far, I'm sure this is the first and probably only story I'll do about it. Well, unless perhaps we see something else like this one. On Wednesday, American hurdlers Cindy McLaughlin and Dalila Mohammed both broke the previous world record in the 400-meter hurdles by nearly half a second. Literally unheard of in track and field. The race was billed as one to watch, and the lovely American women, said Jim Hoff's coverage for the Gateway Pundit, did not disappoint. In fact, he said they're both extremely attractive and gracious, and that made the event even more memorable. 31-year-old Dalila Mohammed is the former Olympic champion and world record holder, while Sydney McLaughlin, who's only 21, held the world record she set recently at the U.S. Olympic trials. Dalila, who battled COVID earlier this year, took off and led the race until the very end, when Sydney McLaughlin out-sprinted her in the final 20 meters. But they both broke the previous world record by nearly a half second, and in the process, of course, took both the gold and silver medals. Whereupon, the two lovely athletes then spoke to NBC, where they did something that NBC evidently didn't like. They praised God and their country. Said McLaughlin, I don't deserve anything, but by grace, through faith, Jesus has given me everything. Records come and go. The glory of God is eternal. Unquote. But as Hoff suggests, NBC seems to have decided Americans don't need to see that video. And as for your host, folks, I guess I have to say this, because for the first time in my life, it's true I haven't watched a single minute of this year's woke Olympics. And up until today, I was pretty sure I hadn't actually missed anything, other than a bunch of spoiled PC leftists and trans something or others emoting and trashing the country, and then for the most part, spectacularly losing. So I guess the good news is those that did watch didn't have to see nearly as many as they might have thought, further disgrace themselves and the country at the medal ceremony. So thanks, Sydney and Delilah. And we'll be right back.
Did you write the book of love, and do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so, how do you believe?
I'm a patriot. Color me red, white, and blue. Fellow patriot.
Welcome back now to the second segment of the show for this evening. I am again your host, Mark Call, and let's continue our review, more or less in chronological order at this point, from the beginning of the week, and some of the great big whopping lies that go along with it, especially when it comes to cover-ups that are now falling apart. That doesn't, of course, mean you're likely to hear about them on CNN until they're in the history books, and they haven't been able to get them changed, though. And let's start here, because this is something that certainly ought to raise more eyebrows than it probably will. Turns out that there were other people killed at that false flag that's being sold to a gullible, dumbed-down American public as a so-called insurrection. And no, they weren't Capitol Police or even embedded FBI agents or provocateurs. Just Americans who may have died because they thought they still had First Amendment-protected rights. And Ashley Babbitt wasn't the only person, as it turns out, who was sacrificed in order to prevent the American people from having a counter-revolution and overthrowing the Bolsheviks who successfully stole the election back on November 3rd. Both of these related stories come from the Gateway Pundit, and the first one says exclusive. A second eyewitness has stepped forward and confirmed that the Capitol Hill police did, in fact, kill a Trump supporter named Rosalind Boyland and then attacked those who tried to save her. And yes, even though you're not going to see it from the official releases of the 14,000 hours of video that are supposedly out there hidden somewhere, there is, at least for now, video up online. Here comes an amazing eyewitness report that's been ignored by the fake news media, says Jim Hoff for the Gateway Pundit, because it does not fit their narrative. Earlier this month, Trump supporter and activist Philip Anderson confirmed to TGP that Capitol Police killed Trump supporter Roseanne Boylan on January 6th. He knows this because he was next to her, even holding her hand, underneath a whole scrum of people who were piled on top of them, for reasons that we'll get to, when she died. And Philip nearly died himself. Activist Philip Anderson spoke with TGP about the January 6th protests at the U.S. Capitol and how the Capitol Police murdered Roseanne Boylan and nearly took his life, too, describing how Roseanne Boylan was actually the first woman killed by Capitol Police that day, before Ashley Babbitt was executed by Capitol Hill Police, or at least somebody who may or may not be allowed to remain nameless. The video shows The video shows a nearly unconscious Philip Anderson being dragged away by Trump supporters after being crushed under a pile of living people with Roseanne Boylan right next to him when she died. He spoke with the Gateway Pundit 6 months after the January 6th protest and rally. Philip Anderson fell and was literally being smothered alive as police officers continued to push Trump supporters on top of him. He told the Gateway Pundit how he was holding Roseanne's hand when she died and posted all of this on social media before, well, guess what? His account was taken down and censored. And now, says TGP, they have a second eyewitness to Roseanne Boylan's death. And for obvious reasons, this person would prefer to remain anonymous. He read the story, he said, and believes he has something to add to it since, quote, me and two others carried Miss Boylan's seemingly lifeless body to the double doors while the cops were pepper spraying us and hitting us with their batons. For what? Trying to save her life? And a bunch more, he said, careless police actions, pushing people down the stairs, people almost suffocating, etc. Military-looking youngsters advancing through the crowd, a crowd that he said was packed like sardines, towards the doors and never coming back. I still, he said, have flashbacks, nightmares, PTSD over it. Just wanted to tell you, though, it wasn't like what the media wants people to believe, what politicians want people to believe. Those military-looking kids, he said, and I'm almost positive they were Antifa, were really aggressive, wanting to break windows and so forth. Some real Trump supporters specifically said there was a lady who almost got in a fistfight with him, tried to stop them, saying, this is not what we're here for. That's trespassing. Then, like I said it above, those youngsters disappeared. I'm sure he said they went inside with the police's help and never came back, while the cops were tear-gassing us and others. I simply went there, he concluded, to observe and express my God-given and constitutionally protected rights, not, he said, to destroy or hurt anyone or to occupy, about a wrongful election. And, he said, we were set up. The second story, again also from TGP, has to do with yet another video posted at Disclosed TV revealing that on January 6, Trump supporters were in fact fired on by Capitol Hill police before the violence started. I've mentioned the video that's been posted online showing Capitol police firing stun grenades and flashbangs into the crowd long before the crowd got violent. Now we're seeing additional witnesses. The police were then seen drenching Trump supporters with pepper spray, all of this before the Trump supporters finally had enough and started attacking the police. And this, they said, was also that time at which a third, not just one or two, but three Trump supporters were killed. Likely, the man died after the vicious assault by the police on January the 6th. And I still, folks, haven't seen his name. Here's another real shocker, courtesy of the CDC, which probably now means cover up deadly crimes. An unpublished study, though, says Neon Nettle, was covered up by the CDC after the results proved conclusively that guns are used far more often for protection than they are for criminal activity. And since that didn't fit their narrative, you know it needed to be deep sixth. The researchers from Florida State University have uncovered evidence that the CDC buried results from the survey when they realized the data didn't fit their agenda. The original study conducted found that guns were used for self-defense 3.5 times more often than they're ever used to commit crimes. And according to the results of that unpublished, and now we know why, CDC study, there were nearly 2.5 million instances a year where people used firearms for self-defense, either defending others or protecting their own property. The CDC conducted the study with data collected from the years 1996, 7, and 8, and the findings, according to Reason magazine, were just recently uncovered, after being hidden for about 2 decades. However, the unpublished study does support previous findings, and I've talked about these for years, by Florida State University criminologist Gary Kleck and fellow FSU professor Mark Gertz, who have claimed since the early 1990s that there are at least 760,000, more likely, a lot closer to that 2.5 million number of defensive handgun uses annually. And by the way, those numbers don't include incidents from jobs where using firearms is a normal part of the operation, like policing. And in a new paper released by Professor Kleck entitled, What Do CDC Surveys Say About the Frequency of Defensive Gun Uses?, he accuses the CDC of suppressing all of those findings and then discuss reasons why the data may have been hidden for all of this time. From there, on we go to another story about something that's being suppressed. It seems that there actually are a whole lot of people who aren't really suicidal, do have a better understanding of science than those who work for CNN and the Biden regime, and would like to date somebody who also isn't suicidal or terminally stupid. And evidently recognizing that market, two mothers from Hawaii, Shelby Thompson, age 27, and Heather Pyle, age 37, founded a company and produced an app called Unjected. That aims to help unvaccinated people meet one another. And you guessed it, didn't you? It's now been removed from the Apple App Store this weekend, and its Instagram also disabled by the socialist media platforms, a move that the Daily Mail said the owners described as censorship. And this seems to be the money quote. A spokesliar for Apple told Insider that the app violated Apple's policies for COVID-19 content. And evidently for truth, too, citing published interviews where the founders said their app was for, quote, like-minded, unvaccinated individuals. Prompting Unjected and the developers to respond, quote, we must use our voices. We're fighting the censorship of our freedoms, and we won't stop. And get this. The Daily Mail actually quotes this bit of garbage from Apple, saying that their policies only allow information, sick, on COVID-1984, oops, they probably banned that too, to come from what they called recognized sources, including governments and, quote, deeply credentialed companies with all kinds of deep state connections, I guess, as well as NGOs focused on health. But they have to, of course, be the right kind of NGOs. I'm sure that the frontline doctors or Robert F. Kennedy's Children's Health Defense need not apply. And after the hammer came down, Unjected's Instagram page with 25,000 followers was immediately deep sixed as well. And on that score, the company suggested that they had simply been deleted because, quote, the recent publicity would draw people to our page, and they didn't want that. But the propaganda mouthpiece Bloomberg may have come closest to the truth when they said that the growing unrejected member base defies efforts by public health sick officials to boost poke rates, or as they put it, to boost vaccination rates. And I have to put sick after that too, because remember folks, this is not a real vaccination. That would involve actually injecting the virus, usually in an attenuated or killed form, as opposed to modifying people's immune systems and DNA via mRNA. But all of this, they said, as the highly contagious COVID-19 Delta variant, booga, 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 spreads across the U.S. And yes, I guess it is worth noting again that there are more than a few people at this point starting to suspect the Delta variant is nothing but an excuse to label those who die as a result of the vaccine with anything else but the truth. All right, from there on to some not good news. As a matter of fact, it's a harbinger of really, really bad news to come. But it's certainly not like we couldn't see this one coming. On Tuesday afternoon, the CDC, and pick your own acronym at this point, announced a new 60-day moratorium on evictions. And we certainly don't need no stinking constitution or legal jurisdiction to do anything we darn well want anymore now, do we? CDC Director Rochelle Walensky acted independently without any actual authority and signed the order as if she thought she was the Biden Fuhrer herself. Quote, "This moratorium is the right thing to do to keep people in their homes and out of congregate settings where booga, 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 COVID-19 spreads," she said, "because those mass evictions and attendant public health consequences would be very difficult to reverse. And what she's too stupid or evil to point out is the consequences are already darn near impossible to reverse, so they're going to push them right over the edge. In other words, they're going to do what leftists always do when government programs fail utterly and miserably, and that's double down and go for broke. And get this, the additional moratorium will allow them to, quote, further increase vaccination rates as well. Which begs the question, how long until the next moratorium will only be for those that have taken the poke? Und the CDC warns there are steep criminal penalties for landlords who break this order, like a $100,000 fine and a year in jail. Huh, I wonder if that's a real jail or a CDC jail. And get this, that's only if Big Brother decrees that the eviction didn't result in death. And it's a whole lot more if the person evicted dies, and Big Brother can pin that on the landlord. So I guess if you do evict somebody, you better pray they didn't take the poke, because you're going to get the blame. Now, I have a really serious question to ask at this point, folks. Given that there's absolutely no legal, much less constitutional basis for the public-private corporate partners at the CDC to make any kind of an actual edict, especially when it comes to somebody else's property, I'm wondering now what's stopping Federal Express from issuing all the edicts it wants too, or for that matter, the local chicken inspectors. And on that score, I thought the comments of Michael Every at Rabobank were kind of illustrative today. "I see no ships," he said. U.S. equity markets are at fresh all-time highs. U.S. 10-year yields are plumbing 1.14% and trending lower. And it doesn't get any more plain sailing than that. But it's also a harbinger of a storm on the horizon. Because if markets are saying we're heading for that new normal at full speed, then we're doing absolutely no build back better at all. In which case, watch out for the icebergs of social unrest and populism. And if you want an example, just from the last 24 hours, consider that the so-called U.S. Center for Disease Control has just announced that extended eviction moratorium, which may or may not allay some immediate economic pressures. It'll kick the can, folks. But it's also, notes this foreigner, blatantly unconstitutional, which is why it hadn't been done until now. The Supreme Court already stated this is an issue that only Congress can act on, but yet the House of Representatives is already in recess until the 13th of September. And a quick aside here, because interestingly, on Friday, the Biden regime admitted that basically they know that what the CDC did was as unconstitutional as hell, but they don't really care. And besides which, given the farce that they've made of the court system and the mess they can make with litigation, it'll take months anyway. They will have gotten away with their moratorium before anybody can do anything about it. Back then to Michael Every, who points to the shipping incidents we've seen of late as further indications of a storm on the horizon. The UK, US, and Israel all jointly accused Iran of having attacked one shipping tanker, killing a British and Romanian sailor, and they've promised consequences. But now Lloyd's of London is stating that Iranian pirates hijacked that tanker in the Straits of Hormuz earlier this week and are sailing it towards Iran. Why, yeah, what could possibly go wrong with a scenario like that, especially when the United States has a communist Chinese puppet pretending to be the Führer? From there, let's go to another one of those stories you can pretty well guarantee that the waste stream will ignore. In July, says a piece from Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit, they confirmed that a Capitol Hill police lieutenant named Mike Byrd was the executioner of Ashley Babbitt. He killed her in cold blood on January 6th in the U.S. Capitol. And after that, the socialists, leftists, Democrats, Pelosi, the deep state, and we repeat ourselves, along with dirtbag FBI Director Chris Wray and the waste stream fake news media, have all been protecting Lieutenant Mike Byrd. They see nothing wrong with his killing that young woman. This is who they are, says Hoft. But on Tuesday, Judicial Watch announced they had received 1,160 pages of documents related to Ashley Babbitt's murder in Washington, D.C. And the documents included a request by D.C. officials to cremate, in other words, destroy the remains of Ashley Babbitt just 2 days after her death. The documents also contained a returned email to the D.C. seat of government. Ready for this? Written in Chinese.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along. Move along.
On Friday, Fox News White House correspondent Peter Ducey asked Jen Psaki what she thought about the threat of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis to withhold funds from school districts that force kids to wear masks because of, quote, the harmful emotional, academic, and psychological effects of putting kindergartners in masks for hours at a time. To which Psaki responded that she didn't really care about keeping her own kids safe. Instead, she wants, quote, public health officials to make decisions about how to keep my kids safe. And when Peter Ducey persisted concerning the harmful effects of muzzling preteens, demonstrably depriving their growing young brains of oxygen, and asked the Biden regime if they had any concerns about that, she said no, they don't. And rather than science, she knows that from her kindergartner. My kindergartner told me 2 days ago that, quote, she could wear a mask all day. She's just happy to go to camp, to go to school, unquote. And I guess, folks, that if she's truly brain damaged, she could always grow up to be a White House spokes idiot in a communist regime. I want to spend a few minutes next on another one of those great overview pieces. This one from C.J. Hopkins at the Consent Factory, Zero Hedge, no doubt Lou Rockwell, and a whole bunch of others as well that figure out just how appropriate this one is. He begins by saying people can tell themselves they didn't see where things have been heading for the last 17 months, but really they did. They saw the signs all along the way. They were written in big, bold letters, some of them even in scary-looking Germanic script. And they said, this is the road to totalitarianism. No, he says, I'm not going to show you all of those signs over again. People like me have been pointing them out and reading them out loud for 17 months now. And anyone who knows anything about the history of totalitarianism, how it incrementally transformed society into a monstrous mirror image of itself, has known since the beginning what the new normal is, and we've been shouting from the rooftops about it. We've watched as the new normal transformed our societies into paranoid, pathological, authoritarian dystopias, where people now have to show their papers in order to see a movie or get a cup of coffee, and publicly display their ideological conformity, i.e., they wear their muzzles like good little slaves, in order to enter a supermarket or buy their groceries. We've watched as the new normal transformed the majority of the masses into hate-drunk, hysterical mobs that are openly now persecuting the unvaccinated, and that would now be the official Untermenschen of the new normal ideology. We've watched, he continues, as the new normal has done precisely what every totalitarian movement in history has done before it, right by the numbers. We pointed this out each and every step of the way, and I'm not going to reiterate it all over again. But I am going to document where we are at the moment and how we got here, for the record, so that the people who will later try to tell you they had no clue that the trains were coming, much less where they were going, will understand why we no longer trust them, why we regard them as cowards and collaborators, or worse. Yeah, he says that's harsh, but this is not a game, certainly not anymore. It isn't a difference of opinion. The global capitalist ruling establishment is implementing a new, more openly totalitarian structure of society and method of rule. They're revoking our constitutional and human rights, transferring power away from sovereign governments and democratic institutions into unaccountable global entities that have no allegiance to any nation or its people. And witness what we just saw with the CDC, folks. They got no authority, certainly no allegiance to the rule of law, and that didn't even slow them down. This is what's happening, he says, right now. It's not a TV show. It's actually happening. And yeah, the time for people to wake up is over. At this point, you can either join the fight to preserve what's left of those once God-given, constitutionally protected rights and that sovereignty, or you can surrender to that new normal, to globalist capitalist, and I'm going to put the other word in here that describes the public-private partnership, fascist totalitarianism. Says CJ, I couldn't care less what you believe about the virus or its mutant variants or the experimental not vaccines. And remember, they're not vaccines. That's just another lie. This isn't an abstract argument over the science. It's a fight, a political, ideological fight. On the one side is democracy or constitutional republics and the rule of law, if you prefer. On the other, totalitarianism. Pick a fucking side, he says, and live with it. Anyway, here's where we are at the moment and how we got here, just the broad strokes. It's August 2021, and Germany has officially banned demonstrations against the new normal official ideology. And other public assemblies, he names one that Americans may not be familiar with from last week, but basically fill in your Antifa, BLM, LGBTQ, politically correct, leftist riot squads and demonstrations. And it's all still allowed. The outlawing of political opposition, though, is a classic hallmark of totalitarian systems. It's also a classic move that we've now seen from German authorities, which will give them the pretext they need to unleash the new normal goon squads on the demonstrators tomorrow. In Australia, the military has been deployed to enforce total compliance with government decrees, lockdowns, mandatory public obedience rituals. In other words, de facto martial law, another classic hallmark of totalitarian systems. In France, restaurants and other business owners who serve the unvaccinated will now be imprisoned, as will, of course, the unvaccinated themselves. The scapegoating, demonizing, and segregating of the unvaxxed is happening in countries all over the world. France is just, at least for now, an extreme example. The scapegoating, though, dehumanizing and segregating of minorities, particularly the regime's political opponents, is another classic hallmark of totalitarian systems. In the UK, Italy, Greece, and numerous other countries throughout the world, this pseudo-medical social segregation system is also being introduced in order to divide societies into the good people, the compliant, the vaxxed, the useful idiots, and the bad people, the non-compliant. The good people are being given licenses and encouraged by the authorities and the corporate media to unleash their rage on the unvaxxed and to demand our segregation into internment camps, read concentration camps, and openly even threaten to murder us viciously. This is also a hallmark of totalitarian systems. And that, my friends, says C.J. Hopkins, is where we are. We didn't get here overnight. Here are just a few of the unmistakable signs along the road to totalitarianism that I've pointed out over the past 17 months. June 2020, the new pathologized totalitarianism. And then he proceeds to make his point by listing all the columns over the last year that warned about where we were headed. And now he says, here we are, where we've been heading all along, clearly, unmistakably heading, directly into the approaching storm. And possibly, maybe probably, global civil war. And this isn't the end of the road to totalitarianism, but I'm pretty sure we're in the home stretch. Feels like things are about to get really ugly. Very ugly. Extremely ugly. Those of us who are fighting to preserve our rights and some basic semblance of democracy are outnumbered, but we haven't yet had our final say, and there are millions of us, and many of us now are wide awake. So pick a side if you haven't already, but before you do, look back maybe at the history of totalitarian systems, which for some reason never seem to work out for the totalitarians, well, at least not for the useful idiots that they run over, and certainly not in the long run. I'm not a professional philosopher, he says, or anything, but I suspect that might have something to do with people's inextinguishable desire for freedom and our willingness to fight for it, sometimes to the death. This, he concludes, feels like one of those times. Sorry, he says here at the end, that I had to go all Braveheart on you, but I'm psyching myself up to go get the you-know-what beat out of me tomorrow by the new normal goon squad, so I'm a little, you know, emotional. Seriously, though, pick a side, or the side will be picked for you. Now, he doesn't say it, folks. I will, and almost always do. Scripture is the real key here. It tells us, choose this day whom you will serve. It's made the same point even for far, far longer than C.J. Hopkins has. Come out of her. Be separate. Don't fall for the great big lie. The totalitarianism of the fake gods who won't let you make the choice that the God of the Bible does. The things that have never worked throughout human history, and the things that we've been warned about literally in every book of the Bible. There's a way that seems right to a man, wrote Solomon in the Proverbs, and the ends thereof are the ways of death. So choose life, folks, but remember, time is drawing short.